The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
All right, you're welcome along to the GAR. This is the football show sponsored by AIB. Two very one-sided provincial finals yesterday, lads, that we're going to get into. Obviously, the positive spin on it was Dublin were sensational, Tyrone were sensational. You know, the negative spin is that all four provincial finals have been a bloody disaster. They've been one-sided games. And, you know, whether these provincial championships are worth anything, that's another week's work. What we do want to start talking with about here, Conan, you were at this game. This was the Tipperary-Armagh game. I was at the airport and didn't see this game live, so I just saw the Sunday game highlights. But Christ almighty, like, I was checking Twitter the whole way when during the match, and Twitter was going absolutely crazy about this referee. And then you see some of the decisions. He doesn't understand the advantage rule. What inter-county referee does not know the advantage rule? Oh, I have to say Pádraig Joyce is in studio with us on Monday there. Maybe that's one of the first things. And we have Tiernan McCann coming up in the show as well. So there's two announcements early doors. But boys, just to the two of you here, is this idea that an inter-county referee doesn't know the advantage rule?
You were so annoyed at this referee, you forgot that Pádraig Joyce is sitting beside
exactly,
us.
Exactly, yeah.
It was very bad. It reminded me of, you know, those referees you get at club football where sort of they love taking their time over decisions. They stick their chest out. It's like, all eyes on me. I'll make the decision when I'm ready. Yeah. And there was one stage where it was a hot ball, and he must have spent about a minute giving off to everyone in the vicinity. You know, get out of the way, you've 10 yards, you know, just going around everyone. And by that stage, the crowd were shouting, throw the bloody thing up, would you? Like, It wasn't biased in any way. Both supporters were really baying for his blood at the stage. Like, and you know, I think Armagh were really screwed over with their goal. Like, that was a really strange, like, McParland's goal, was it?
Yeah, McParland's
goal. Really strange decision, because he actually blew the whistle before McParland even got the ball. Like, you know, it didn't even look to be a foul. The move wasn't done. It was just reaching for the ball.
Yeah, that's the point I'm trying to make. He clearly doesn't understand that there's an advantage rule now. Like, I mean,
he understands the rule is there, Colin, but it's just that he's nowadays when referee gets freeze, they should just put their hand out. But initially, he just blew the whistle, which was a mistake. Look, he'll probably admit it was a mistake. Like, it was a clear goal, to be honest. Like, I mean, okay, was there much of a foul in at the time? I didn't think there was, to be honest. But if he played the advantage, didn't forget about blowing the whistle, Armagh would have scored a goal. And I see Liam Kearns has given out about the performance of the referee in general, but I think the one incident he'd be very peeved off with was when, I think it was 12 each, or 13 each maybe, definitely a Tipperary player was fouled, where Jamie Clark came back and tried to dive on the ball and clean the legs out from under the Tipperary forward going through and goal. That would have been Liam Kearns' biggest gripe all day.
And the referee, actually, this is what Kearns' gripe was, and you could see him last night, and it was highlighted, I was watching it on the player, that he's doing this diving, action that you're a dive. Like, I mean, is there anything going to infuriate a player that if you're fouled and you're told you're diving? Like, I mean, it's outrageous. And this is him trying to look like he's clever, like he's smart. And we saw it with Goff in the Connacht final. I wasn't here last Monday, but I was infuriated watching Goff in the Connacht final. Three frees he gave in the first half, off the ball, right? If you're off the ball with a handful of a jersey, grand. I'd always applaud a referee for doing that. But the Galway players were just touch tight. You're allowed to be touch tight. A manager tells you, be close, stay touch tight, don't move away. So if your hand is on his back, it's not a foul, or it's on his shoulder. Like, but Goff was like, look at me. Look, I'm on this higher level of refereeing that I'm able to see these, you know, these fouls off the ball. It's all about them. It's all about them. And referees need to realise that it's not all about them. Referee the game. Stop calling dives. Because this referee, Nealon, isn't it? It was completely out of his depth. But he probably thinks, oh, there's diving's coming into the game and I'm going to rectify this.
Well,
do you know what I mean?
That he rectify it, deal with it. Like, why are you signalling someone's dive and you're not going over and giving them the appropriate punishment for it? Like, you've obviously spotted that someone's dive, which he didn't really, but, you know, is it making that gesture, then give him the simulation punishment for it. Like, you know, wee things like that don't sit well with fans or players. Philip Austin went through as well for Tipperary. Like, Liam Kearns has every right to feel aggrieved. Philip Austin went through also got pulled back when there should have been an advantage and Tipperary might have gotten another goal. Yeah. I think Armagh were the better team, but just the ref really took away from an otherwise brilliant game.
Yeah, no, I think he did. And to be honest, from looking at Twitter, it looked like that tip was, it sounded like Tipperary had a certain goal. He didn't at all. He had a lot of work to do. Yeah. If anything, Armagh should be more aggrieved by the two refereeing advantage decisions, because they scored a really good goal and Tipperary only had an off chance of a goal, which probably wasn't going to be a goal. Anyways, but look, listen, I don't know what they're going to do about the refereeing, because, like, I mean, the black card's getting awful bad press, and there was two more fouls in the full back line on full backs, which I don't think are black cards. It's not that cynical. I don't think there were two massive. Maybe Dean Rock did put his arms around, but sometimes that's a natural reaction to go. Oh,
it's a natural thing. It's natural. Put your hands out.
Kind of, yeah. I don't know what it is, but, like, I mean,
no malice in it, really.
No, I don't think so, and I don't think it's massively cynical. Like, it's not like you're stopping a counter attack that's on the bloody full back line or a breakaway. Like like you always say, Colin, is that the black card isn't a problem, it's the refereeing. And there's no problem with when you give a red card that isn't a red card, people don't say the red card isn't working. Yeah. The black card is an excellent card, but it's not being, you know, it's not being refereed properly, and it's getting awful bad press because the referees are just incompetent at enforcing it. A lot of them are. From that bit of a moan, I'm going to go to another moan I have here, and it's calling it the Alan Brogan bounce, because Alan Brogan started this. He 100% started this. This is the really pronounced bounce that you get about 8 steps using just the bounce. Now, Daniel Flynn uses it absolutely blatantly. Ronan O'Neill, for his second goal yesterday, did it. He got the ball, a beautiful crossfield ball, and he was cutting inside his man, and in one bounce, because he took so long over the bounce, he must have taken about eight or ten steps.
I counted 9 steps.
9 yeah. steps.
So what, like a big basketball bounce?
Yeah. Daniel Flynn will actually do, he'll hold it up, and he might hold it up in the air like for 3 or 4 seconds while he gets 4 steps in that whole thing. Brogan started it. Shane Walsh does it from Galway. Tommy Walsh from Kerry kind of does it. It's this pronounced bounce that takes forever while you're absolutely tearing away from your man. It's brilliant. But if you want to be a clever referee, start calling that for overcarrying.
Yeah, but look, every rule is there to be broken, and everyone will push it to the edge. But it is, like, you actually, you get the ball in your hand and you're seen to play the ball, and everyone's, oh, here he goes, he's going to bounce it now. But in the meantime, he's about 8 steps taken before he does actually bounce the ball.
Yeah.
And definitely, I have to agree with you, Alan Brogan was the first player I remember seeing doing that over the years. But look, at fair play to them, hope they get away with it for as long as they can.
It's the Alan Brogan bounce. Well, we're coining that. That one now, Conan. I can't believe you, being from Ulster, know every trick in the book. You don't know about the Alan Brogan bounce.
I was just more concerned about Daniel Flynn, whether or not he meant to put that score over the bar or not. Did that bounce getting away from Brian Fenton, was it? When Brian Fenton's coming after you, you have every right to try something like that.
He does it all the time. Porrick, actually, while we have you, what's your thoughts on Daniel Flynn's point? Conan was tweeting that he didn't think Daniel Flynn meant it.
I don't think he meant it, to be honest. Because
you don't.
No, if you watch his, I watched the game. If you watch him, the replay of the game, like, you can just see his head. He looks across the goal, and there is one Kildare player on the edge of the square. Now, he was obviously trying to pinpoint, just to be a pinpoint pass. But look, we give him the benefit of the doubt. But I don't think he did. But it looked a fantastic score.
Is the point that he looked in? Just because he looked in, he might have looked in and went, right, there's nothing on there, and he's an audacious type of player. That he would go for something like that. You know what I mean? Just because he looked doesn't mean that's what he was trying to do.
Yeah, but he 2 seconds to change. Like, I know as a forward, if you're going through the goal, it doesn't matter if there's 3 inside in the square on their own. If you look at the post, if you're going for the post, you're going for the post. You're not looking to see where the players are. You're looking to see where the posts are, not where the spare man is.
Well, like, I mean, so if you're saying, what you're saying is he's going for a pass, it was the worst pass in the history of passes. Because, like, I mean,
someone said that to me, like, who's he passing to? A bloody giraffe? I thought he was just trying to drop it in to see what'll happen, and if it goes over, even better. But I'm watching it more and more, and I'm starting to doubt myself. But he definitely looks across himself, and he doesn't have an all against the post.
He kicked it so hard, though, Conan. Like, this, like, it was an awful shank. I think I said it on the podcast here before. It's not that's never happened to me. In a county final against Timahoe, I scored one of the best points I've ever scored in my life, and I didn't mean it. It just came off. I was trying to give it to full forward on the edge of the square, and the way it just came off my boot, like, I couldn't believe what was happening. It was a lovely fader. I was out near the sideline, and I remember my father telling me the next day, like, that was a really good score, and I didn't tell him it wasn't it. But all the Portlaoise players, I couldn't kick long range scores, so they were all laughing. They knew right well this was just after hitting flush. So it's not like it doesn't happen. I don't know, I just think Flynn is that type of player that would have gone for that at the end of a big run as well. Do you know, he wanted to finish off this cool run and stick it over the bar. So I'm saying yes, you're both saying no.
You're really backing yourself from out there, aren't you? Oh, sideline, 21 yards out.
He's like that though. It's not Paddy Brophy. I wouldn't think Paddy Brophy would go for that, but Flynn would.
I love Porrick as the last say on this.
No, he won't change my mind. I don't think he did.
Right, okay. Pete McGrath, lads, because I'm a little bit torn on this one, because usually I'm always on the player's side on these kind of things, right? You have to say these are the facts. Yes, he did lead them to an All-Ireland quarterfinal in 2015. Yeah, he did well against Mayo last year. They're coming off a horrific year this year. They were hammered by Monaghan and hammered by Armagh, and they were relegated from Division 2. So on the face of it, if Pete McGrath had something good going on, he might have lost it, you know. So from that point of view, you'd say players, right, there's 4 years down now and they want to move on. Another way of looking at it is that this year they only had six of the team that played against Dublin 2 years ago. So Pete McGrath isn't playing with a full deck in a county that doesn't exactly have a huge playing population anyways. You know, so it's a really difficult one. My initial instinct is to say the players are right. And then I'm thinking, Jesus, Pete McGrath didn't have a full hand here at all. You know, like, I mean, it seems a little bit harsh as well. So I'm kind of...
Yeah, but you have to ask the question, Colin, like, why is there only six players playing from...
Well, that's another point,
ago,
yeah.
You know? I mean, like, okay, is it the players' fault going away or whatever, like, but... Fermanagh are predominantly a Division 4 or 3 team. They have been there for the majority of their playing days. Okay, they got to Division 2 last year, but that's because they've improved a bit. Okay, they've gone slip back down again out to Division 3. But like, it's unfortunate that these things happen. I think players should play, as my eyes, managers should manage. But when the managers are managing, they should get the best 30 players available in the county for the team. And that includes the county board as well, should row on board, like, as well, because there is situations where lads are working in Dublin or working where, like, and like, you have to try and get lads jobs locally around the place. You look at I can't name one Kerry player working outside Kerry, put it that way. There's no Dublin player working outside Dublin, obviously. Do you know, like, any good teams, all the Kilkenny hurlers are working probably in Kilkenny, bar one guy I know that's in Dublin. But like, you have to get your county players, do what you can for them, keep them around, keep them in employment, keep them there. So like that's 24 players you're saying, so that's gone from the, well, sorry, 9 from the team that's gone from 2 years ago. Like, sir, where are they gone? Like yeah. they're not all retired, one or two might be, but like Pete McGrath, I had him as an Australia rules manager in 04 or 05, like, and he was great guy. Like, he's a staunch GAA guy, like, and yeah. Look, he's you can't argue with his record. He's won Ireland titles with Down, he plays good football, he's all for it, the attackers, that kind of stuff. But look, at unless Pete's has dropped his standards since I've seen him, or something's gone on drastically wrong, it's very hard to comprehend what's going on there.
I heard from talking to players he is very old school, and that's no surprise. Like, I mean, he's a manager in the early 90s, he was brilliant, so like, I mean, he is a little bit old school. He's Raymond Johnson in there, who helps him kind of maybe with the more modern slant on the way the game has gone. I'm sure he's learning as well. But the attitude I don't like, right, is that this is a report I was hearing today. McGrath led Fermanagh to an All-Ireland quarterfinal in 2015 in a spirited display and almost masterminded a qualifier win over Mayo last year. So McGrath is getting all the credit for these two things, but then Fermanagh have a nightmare year. And why is McGrath not getting criticised for this? Why is that the player's fault? But when Fermanagh do well, and I always remember this was a huge feature when Mick O'Dwyer was over Laois, is that when we'd have a great win, he was the messiah. When we'd have a bad loss, we were losers. So like, he was untouchable. Like, he got the credit for the wins, but never got the criticism for the losses. And it can get very frustrating from a player's point of view when that kind of thing happens, you know?
I never like when the players get criticism for these upheavals, as they're being called now. Like, in my opinion, whether it's county standard or club senior standard, every manager, before he decides if he's going to stay on or not, should actually have a meeting with the players and put it to them. Like, you know, have a vote, have a chat amongst yourselves. You decide, do you want to keep me on or not? I'll go out of the room for whatever amount of time. Then you can all have a chat. Porrick shaking his head here.
I disagree with that.
But like, I don't know why you would want to stay on if the players don't want you to stay on.
I don't think that players should be picking and choosing who they want to manage teams. Like, look, not every player is going to get on with every manager. It's as simple as that. You're going to have 30 individual different personalities. You're going to have 4 or 5 hard cases that's hard to manage. As well, Colm knows here.
But the majority of them then will decide the manager will stay on. Like, you won't, 3 or 4 bad eggs won't spoil that.
The point it is, if it's 3 or 4 bad eggs trying to push this, you say, okay, like, I don't think players will get sucked into that. the squad knows themselves, look, you don't try, you're only sore or whatever. But if a few leaders on the team want rid, and the manager knows he wants rid, it's very difficult for a manager to win that back over. And Pete McGrath, before he got kept on for another year, he knew this was going on, and he decided to still keep going until it became untenable during the week. I would say Pete McGrath made a mistake there, because if he's hearing back stories, and if it's not the two or three messers, like two or three messers have very little influence over the squad anyway, it's the lads that don't mess have, you know, that if they're offside, Pete, you're a dead man walking and you're as well off. And because Pete McGrath's done nothing, no harm to his reputation with Fermanagh, if anything, he's enhanced it. Just walk away, Pete, you don't need that shit. Now you're walking away after being kept on, and it's a bigger scandal than what it would be. I don't know, my advice to managers when that happens, and there's a majority of the panel think that, you know, they want to move on, you just need to bite the bullet and move on, especially after 3 years as well. It's not like after the first year.
I'm just thinking about it from a player's point of view. What would you boys think, though, like if you're heading into a fifth year with a manager and you think it's maybe not going somewhere, or some of the players aren't rolling behind it, some of the best players in the county aren't out with the team, would you not feel that how long is your county career? Would you not feel like you maybe should be pushing for a change?
Yeah, you could look at it. It has happened in counties over the years, but look at, I think it's a bad situation to, if the manager lets it go that far. Anyways, like, you know, if a manager's in a county for 2-3 years and there's discontent every year, surely to God, like, he knows the time is up, and the county board should even rein it in, because like the county board, when they go in, realise that they have to put like a plan in place. Not this. I don't like the county boards that hire these managers for 3 years off, 3 years now, and Johnny has it for 3 years, and then but like there should be a 10-year plan like that. If Johnny gets it, that Mikey and Joe are two selectors, that if Johnny goes, that Mikey and Joe move into the job, and they try and keep some sort of continuity. This is what Dublin have done over the years, like, you know, between minor 21s, they've planned ahead. Like Kerry is the same down below, like that's there's no rocket science as to why they're so far ahead of everybody else. Like.
Yeah, no, they are better run, right? Be interesting to see who they get in after that, or if anybody will want, because often with those teams who get rid of managers, there's a lot of pressure on the players the following year. Quickly before we move on to talk to Tiernan McCann, because we're looking forward to that, one of his teammates, Niall Morgan, lads. So Hanlon's running through and goes wing back, and it was a bit of a wing back's effort. He tried to rattle the net out of it, and he put it wide. Niall Morgan didn't save this. Niall Morgan pretty much did nothing, only he dived in a desperate fashion. A lot of the right hand side of the goal was left there. That's why O'Hanlon tried to bury it into it. Niall Morgan dived. He was never making it if it was going in. O'Hanlon fell on the ground, and instead of kicking the ball out really quickly, Niall Morgan thought the best thing to do would be to bend down and start shouting in O'Hanlon's ear. Like, I mean, what are you thinking of, Niall? Like, this looks absolutely terrible. And the reason that, like, Tyrone have lost all that nonsense. Like, Tyrone aren't into this kind of, you know, cynical trash talk. And when's the last time you've seen them at that? They're not at the kind of dive. You know, the accusations that are at Tyrone, whether you want to admit it was fair or unfair. Tyrone are not that type of team. Tyrone are an incredibly likeable team now. Tiernan McCann, who's coming up on the show, completely, you know, transformed his career since that criticism of the dive. He's an outstanding wing back now. But like, Niall Morgan, why are you doing that? Why was that the first thing that jumped into Niall Morgan's head?
Crazy. Look, it's the one part of the game that I think that the GAA need to clamp down in big time. It's not just Niall Morgan, it goes on in every game. You watch fellas kicking freeze wide, the cornerback is up and he'll give you a dunt and he'll tell you how close you are or whatever. But like what Niall Morgan done yesterday, to me, like, I was of the opinion that was a black card for remonstrating or thing. I know it's what officials,
it's verbal abuse, it's verbal officials, like, isn't it? Or is it verbal abuse? I think
it's verbal abuse overall is what the black card is in for. But look, it's not nice to see. It's a part of the game, you just get out of it. Niall is one of the best keepers in the country. It's just a reaction to him. Obviously that was a big turning point in the game. Had the shot been miskicked, it probably would have been in the net, but he just hit it too well and left the corner, went for glory to try to, as I say, unhinge the net, which was probably the wrong thing to do at the time. But definitely what happened afterwards, Niall, probably look back at this morning, he'd probably be a bit embarrassed looking at it.
Yeah, I'd imagine he will. Like, I mean, especially when it's a goalkeeper. If it's a cornerback and your man misses a score and you jog it back to your position and you're giving him a bit of guff, Niall Morgan's job when that ball goes wide is to get a bloody kick out the field. But he actually wanted to abandon that duty just so he could get a bit of trash talking into O'Hanlon.
I wouldn't say Tyrone are a likeable team. I'd say they're a brilliant team, you know, full of amazing players. But
they're not mutually exclusive, you know.
Yeah, like I just, I mean, We saw it last year against Mayo. Like, Tyrone are masters of this. Like, and I think they'll be doing it again in the quarterfinals if it's against Kildare or whoever. They'll be in your ear. They'll be reminding you of when you've missed. I think all the big teams do that. All their real tough defenders and maybe some goalkeepers do it. It was strange considering Niall Morgan had no hand in this, but it reminds me of a story that we heard on Thursday night on the GAR. Willie McCreary from Kildare was telling the story of Colin Parkinson half heartedly chasing him down the pitch, not getting anywhere near him. He misses anyway, but Parkinson eventually catches up on him and starts giving him abuse and shouting in his ear. Had no part to play in the miss.
It's hard for me to actually criticise this because I actually didn't remember that from Willie McCreary. I have flashbacks of now, so this will tell you how stupid I was. We're about 10 points down in the second half against Kildare. I'm not playing well. Nuxer Buckley's knocked me into the ground. Eddie McCormack has given me the runaround. It was my second ever game, and I'm that big of a mouthpiece that Willie McCreary misses a goal, and I want to tell Willie, you're useless.
You're done.
You're done.
I can't believe the fact you couldn't catch Willie McCreary. That's the biggest, and then Willie got brought off.
I got taken off 10 minutes later. So Willie was really enjoying that one. Yeah.
Is it not part of it? I know it's not a great part, Connor. There's this part, there's definitely.
I had it in my time when I played with a couple of the Ryan McMenamin, who was a great crack with him, like, you know, telling you stuff, like, and he was getting a bit personal, but it was a bit of crack, like, you know. He'd have the old smart comment, and not just Ryan McMenamin, there's plenty of lads at it at the time, but it's just going back in and bending down and shouting a guy's ear, like, that to me is not part of the GAA. Like, okay, the fella goes through on goal, kicks a wide, you can have a smart comment on the way out to him, you know, and go back or whatever. But like that's legend to me. That's down shouting in person's ears or faces. It's just unacceptable.
And the optics of it, like, I mean, O'Hanlon's lying on the ground. You know what I mean? It's not even face to face. He's shouting in his ear as he's lying prone on the ground because he's missed an awful. It just looks really bad. But anyways, we want to leave it there, lads, because Tiernan McCann is waiting on the line now. Tiernan, that Ulster Championship is getting very easy for Tyrone now.
I definitely wouldn't say that. I know this year we probably were the bookies favourites going into it, but we had a couple of comprehensive wins, but yesterday wasn't easy at all. The Darrow Hanlon effort just before half time, if that had been in, we would have been under massive pressure to come back in that game. And I think just in the second half we went out and performed really well for about 10 or 15 minutes and just held up a bit of a lead, and sort of managed to get ahead of them and stay ahead of them, and we'll make them on, score down two goals. So happy enough to win again and get into the last eight.
It must have, and I accept the first half was really, really, was, you know, very close. Down came back into it, but it must have been a really nice feeling maybe for the last 10 minutes when the two goals went in, and you kind of realise it's a lovely sunny day, we're in Clonus, there's 31,000 here, and, you know, we have the game won. You could really relax and enjoy it.
Yeah, and that's maybe why the celebrations after for some of the players were a bit subdued.
Yeah.
As you say, last year we literally didn't know who was going to win until them two monster points at the end in 70-odd minutes, so it was more of a shock feeling, and obviously there was a relief on us last year too, because this team hadn't won one before, so it was a different feeling this year, but equally as satisfactory, so delighted to get it.
Yeah, a lot of people say when they win a competition for the second time is more enjoyable because the first one's always a blur. But then, I suppose when you put it in the context that last year's one was so exciting at the end, you know, maybe today you might enjoy it a bit more.
Maybe we've great weather today, and it's good to reflect on yesterday, and it sinks in a wee bit more. And as you say, it's great to enjoy it when they're winning. Things are all going good. So,
and come here, when the full time whistle blows in games like that, do you go running for Conal?
No, not really.
No,
I didn't even know where he was yesterday. After the county final last year, I sort of did. That was one time we did, but I didn't even see him after. I don't even think I hugged him or anything. I don't even remember seeing him, to be honest. I think he was with Romy and Sparky, our two good friends.
Right, okay.
But the people were on that quick. That's Conal just walking past me there now. The people were on that quick in Clonus. Everybody comes in and embraces you really quick. So you're doing well to spot anybody, to be honest. As you said, there was 30,000 or something on it yesterday, so at least half of those were drone fans.
Yeah, it must be nice.
So it's great for the county. Like, we had a barn spell there at the start of the 2010 and on, and we hadn't won enough exams up, so you don't take things for granted. Like, that's two in a row now, and we were just discussing this today. I think there's maybe more people yesterday than there was last year. I don't know if people last year, maybe they were travelling in hope rather than expectation, but this year there seems to be a real buzz about the county, and it really drives the players on.
Yeah.
Honestly, it really does. It's a bit of a cliche, but it's really, you see your families and friends and people from the clubs coming on after to congratulate you. That's the most satisfying thing, to be honest, at the end of the game.
It must be really nice to have your brother involved as well. You know, he's made a big impact in midfield, and you know, your father's big into the team as well and advising the two of you, I'm sure. I met him at the Ulster final last year, and he's a very enthusiastic kind of, you know, positive sort of man, and he's very involved in advising the two of you as well.
He would be, to be honest, he would be, if he's not in his holidays in Portugal. He only came back there the other day. He's a teacher, like, so I'm very jealous of the teachers. All my friends are teachers, and especially this time of year, they've loads of time off. So no, it's great to have him. It's great to have him because he's been there and done it, and it's great to get any advice going. And just before we left yesterday, he was geeing us up again, so it's great to have him, thank God.
Yeah, I saw you on record saying he kind of advises you on where you can improve on your game, whether it's finishing or catching above my head. Are they two areas that you think you can improve on?
Well, kicking was something that put finishing, going for points, was something I put a real focus in about 12 to 18 months ago, and because I wasn't really a score getter a couple of years ago. I was happy enough to lay it off, which is the right thing to do at times too, but if the opportunity arises, you need to take your score as well. So that's something I've really honed in on this last year, and you have to continue to work on that. He would be critical in a good way, though. In a good way, you know, he'll not let you get ahead of yourself. And even when I went up yesterday to lift the cup on his walking past, he goes, "You had a shaky first half, but you were better in the second half," which is good. It's good to get that, and I know that myself. I'm my own biggest critic, so I think about the two or three things that I did wrong in the first half rather than anything else that I did better in the second half, so it's good to have him.
You've really found your home at wing back on this team, Tiernan. You have it down to a T. Like, I mean, it suits all your qualities down to the ground, especially now that you've obviously practiced on kick and score, so you can bring that to it as well. But you know, having that help with the defensive side of the game, with your tactics, and then having that freedom just to go and join an attack, it must be a lovely position to play with the way Tyrone play.
It is. It suits me down to the ground, and we're playing games and training all the time. You know, it's just this class to be part of the team and been able to play like that, and it's not as if, you know, I'm going every single time. You can take a rest too, and there's other boys willing to do the same thing. With so many adaptable players in the group that do that. But it's, I know I've heard recently in the media about the 15, the line out, that, you know, three full backs and the orthodox, that doesn't really exist anymore, and it's become a game now where there's just 15 poplars. You have a couple of men tagging and a couple of finishers up front, and then there's a middle 8 or a middle 10 nearly now.
Yeah.
So we've loads of players like that within our whole group, and even within Tyrone that they're capable of playing, so I'm just lucky to be part of it at the minute, to be honest.
Yeah, and when you break, Tiernan, like, I mean, is your instructions to you to break whenever you have the energy to break, or who, you know, do you just decide based on how many other fellas are breaking, or what way does that work with from your point of view?
I think you'd be foolish to think you can go every time.
Yeah.
Because if you go every time, you might only last 10, 15 minutes. So you have to pick and choose when to go. And in a way, you can't be selfish in that. You can't sit back all the time. Like, if the likes of Niall Sludden and Kieran McGarry and Peggy Hart and Matty were involved in one move, then, you know, it's your time to really step up. I don't know. It just comes naturally, to be honest. We aren't given massive instruction. We just sort of go out and play, and that's being truthful. which sometimes you play off the cuff like that, and you just go and try and express yourself. To be honest,
I think from looking at your tactics, like it, and Sean Kavanagh said it after the game, it's usually keep it tight as possible in the first half, and then when the other team starts tiring, you know, it, the third quarter, like Sean said, that's kind of the way you the game will open up a little bit more, and then you flooding forward, kind of is able to overpower teams.
Yeah, the game always opens up like that. It might take 40 minutes, it might take 50, it might take 60. If you look at the Donegal Ulster final last year, it didn't really open up until the last 10. So
yeah,
it's not something we specifically target. We just know that at some stage things will open up and will help our purple patch, and that's when you really have to capitalise on that, and you have to pick off scores. And maybe in the past against maybe the likes of Mayo last year, that's where we've fallen back in those stages. We haven't picked up enough.
Yeah,
picked off enough scores.
But do you think, like, we've said this on the podcast, that against the likes of Mayo, you don't seem to commit as many bodies forwards. That, like, you're a little bit conservative.
That's not intentional.
Right.
Higher the opposition, obviously, there's more men that need marked.
Yeah.
There's more dangerous forward, so maybe we have three or four marking, and then there's only really maybe six or seven that can go if there's one or two up the field or whatever. That's not something deliberate, to be honest. It's hard to know why. We'll soon see now, going into the last eight, when we're playing top quality opposition, what way it'll work out.
Yeah, but I suppose that makes perfect sense. If the likes of Mayo like to leave four forwards up there, then they have to be marked, so less of you can break. You know, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah. Sometimes we play those teams, they're happy to keep three or four up. Not to use the word cheating, but, you know, sometimes when a forward stays up, you can't.
Yeah.
Send 10 boys up the field and there's only four at the back and there's still five more players up. Not that that happens that regularly, but that's the sort of thing that you have to be wary of.
Yeah. Come here, you're working in Dublin and you're living in Dublin, in Santry now, is that right?
Yeah. Enjoying it down there. I don't see that much of it, but really I'm just there for work, and it's good to get out to the beach and stuff too. There's not enough work for pharmacists in the north. It's sort of a real overpopulated profession in the north, so all the northerners are going down for the work. But it's gone, suits well, and the travelling and all, got used to it. Like, to be honest, I was actually coming home on Saturday morning and I had the podcast on from Newbridge the other night, and that helps the journey, to be honest, if I've ran out of Ed Sheeran songs to
Are you saying to me it's a choice between Ed Sheeran and the GAA hour when you're driving to training?
Depends on mood, man. Ed's good for if you're in a sloppy mood, Ed's good to sing along to, and then if you're in a GAA head mood, which I am probably most of the week, then I turn these boys on.
Yeah, because some players say they like to get away to get away from it, or they don't read the papers. But, like, I don't believe them, because, like, I mean, the curiosity and the, like, we're all GAA fans regardless of whether you're a player or not.
Well, that's the funny thing. When I'm working in Dublin, like, none of the Dubs wouldn't have a clue who I am or anything. So there's no real GAA talk all day from 9 to 7, and then most of my friends are at home, so anything I'm chatting about, it's non-GAA related, so I'm happy enough to come back home to Tyrone, and that's the first thing mentioned and the only thing mentioned.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. I was reading that you don't go into work on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Like, you're flexible enough in your work that you can choose the days that you go in, and maybe you have your own routine, so you don't work Tuesdays and Thursdays so that you can make it back up for training. Is that right?
That's right, but to be honest, recently I've had a lot of good GAA people and other people in the industry that have been accepting and have been able to leave at 4. For example, this week I worked all week, and I don't know, in the past maybe I hadn't worked as much, thinking in the build up to a big game I wouldn't work as much, but then I'm thinking sometimes it's better to be in routine and working all week and eating at the same times, and do you know what I mean? Sometimes it's hard to beat routine too, but most of the time I would try to get away in time for training, because it's a 2-hour trek to Gravai and then 2 hours back up the road, and then you have to factor in your foam rolling after the drive and stretching and whatnot in some day too. So it's all good. It's working out the minute, like, but long term, I don't know what'll do, but it's sitting okay at the minute.
Yeah, yeah, no. And how long of a commute is it back to Garvahy from where you are in Santry?
If I'm leaving Dublin, it probably takes close to 2 hours if I'm going down to Chinnan. But then if I'm coming back up the road late at night, there's not as many cars on the road. It's about 1 hour and 45.
Ah, right.
And that's
okay.
sticking to the speed limits, just in case there's any guards listening there.
Right, okay. Come here, yourself and your brother have bloody great hair. Do you get that a lot?
Yeah, a lot. Well, usually slagged about it, but is that not a common thing now that all young lads... You know, 5 years ago, you just went in for a crew cut, but nowadays everybody's getting fresh haircuts. I don't know, me and Colin obviously get this stuff, but there's loads of places. Like Ryan Johnson's was fresh yesterday, and there's loads of Trump boys that have fresh fades on go.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Roman O'Neill and Mark Bradley there. And even Michael Cassidy, he would have been a two all over man for years in our bow. He's recently got a fade and a wee line at the side now, so I think it's just. With the times, you have a bit of a crop fade yourself, do you really? Or?
I do, yeah. I get a bit of a fade, and I always had longer hair. This fade thing is all new to me in the last year or two, you know. So
yeah, see, that's it. we get flagged for it, but you're. Well, the times.
Well, what you and your brother stand out about is the amount of product you put in your hair.
I know, we're out of fortune buying stuff. Can't keep it welded. Well, he grew his hair there for about 9 months, and then. I think he did ask. He was told that he couldn't go on a date with a girl and plus he cut his hair, so he got a cut. So and then he put a bit of blonde on it too. So that's why his is so out there at the minute.
Yeah, his is pretty out there. Like we haven't really seen that. Usually, longer hair doesn't really suit Gaelic football. It'd be in your eyes, but he's got it slicked back so much that it's not moving anywhere.
He was going for your style, I think, and he got a lot of stick after the Derry game, looking like somebody out of, I can't remember who it was John Travolta or somebody out of some film or something, and he ended up getting a cut again.
Come here, listen, before I let you go, are you over all that diving stuff that went on that year? Like, I mean, because I saw you haven't talked about it very often, but I saw some quotes where you just put your head down, and like I think everybody in the country can see that you put your head down and you worked on your shooting, and like, you know, you're like, I don't think anybody when they hear Tiernan McCann now thinks about the dive to think about an outstanding wing back. You know, was it hard to change that to turn that perception around?
I don't know, but that's still good. Still get a touch now and again. That's something that's going to live with me, and I just had to. What do? You have to just get over it, and there's not really much you can do. Only don't do it again. It was a mistake, and
yeah.
As I said on record, I just concentrated on my football, and that's what I tried to do. So I would work in Monaghan now and again, and people are usually very nice about it. And yes, I get flagged now and again, but. I'm always probably going to be remembered for that, and that's just something I have to live with. But
yeah, I don't think you will, Tiernan, to be honest. I don't think you will. I think I think you've turned that perception around in the last couple of years. That for me, I don't think of it at all now. Like, I mean, I'm sure you get sledged about it on the field and stuff, do you?
I know in a game, but sure, everybody's going out doing a game, and if they can put you off your game, they're going to try and do it. But I'm well used to it at this stage, to be honest. I've got it for. It's nearly 2 years since that happened, so just something, as I say, just have to live with it and try and do what you're saying I've sort of done there and try and change it around and make people think of the footballer as opposed to the act that I did. So it's a hard subject to talk about sometimes, but oh well, you just have to sort of get over it. And
yeah, because
I didn't tell anybody.
No, exactly, and it didn't change the outcome of the game either. You know, you shouldn't have done it, but like the game was won. It's not like it had a big bearing on the result. But like, I mean, you're one of the players in the country that, you know, started a debate for a full week. Dear McConnelly's done it only recently. Aidan O'Shea,
it's marvelous, isn't it?
Yeah, but what's it like being in the middle of a storm like that?
Well, I don't want to play myself as a victim because I wasn't. You know, I did it. I was the one that. Took a tumble, and, but my parents were away and all day, and you know they're the people that are, you know, biologically programmed to pick you up when you're down like that, and
yeah,
it fact in my work too, it was sort of, you know, I deal with the public a lot, obviously, when I, with prescriptions and whatnot, and that affected me in that way. And then it was tough, I'm not going to lie. And, you know, I'm a firm believer in everything happens for a reason. And, you know, it made me not worry about what people thought as much after that, because I quickly learned that that's something you have no control over. So why bother worrying about it? It's like people say before a game, control controllables. Like, you can't change the weather, you can't change the referee's opinion. So why worry about those things? You can control your work rate or your, you know, determination, your communication. You can control all those things, but you can't control what people say and what people think. So, you know, I just learned to learn the hard way that you just have to tear away, and such is life.
Yeah, listen, well, it was a tough lesson to learn so young, but I suppose maybe it'll make you stronger in the long run.
It's one of those things now with social media and something, you know, everybody just gets on a bandwagon, and, you know, I couldn't actually, it's very, very difficult to delete Twitter. You know, you can't just delete it, and you have to go on the browser, and it took me like half a day trying to figure out those tweets and all coming through every couple of seconds, and people could say, well, why read them? But you know what's going on in the back of your mind, so,
yeah,
and they're coming through your phone, like, what do you do? And somebody goes, oh, they said this about you or said that about you. But it's just one of those things, and it's like the Jim Connolly thing too. One person says something and then everybody's in the bandwagon at times, but that's the modern world we live in now. I've since took myself off Twitter, obviously, or having me back on Twitter since then. I know it can be very useful for scores and getting people's thoughts in 140 characters, whatever, but it gives you a platform for people to directly give you abuse. So I don't know why anybody would put themselves up with that, to be honest.
Yeah, because I don't know if you read Dara O'Shea's piece in the Irish Times recently, but he was saying when he was playing, and it's the same when I was playing, is that we just, if there was something going on with you, you just didn't buy three or four papers. But now with Twitter, you have to avoid your mentions because people can get directly inside your head. So for your generation, it must be really difficult.
Yeah, and even scrolling, like, you go on Facebook to see what your friends are doing, whatever, and it comes up on a headline on something like sportsjoe.ie or whatever, Humans of the GA or any of those things.
Yeah.
Even like Ronnie yesterday doing his wee celebration, I think Benchwarmers or something on Instagram have 500,000 followers, and they put it up, and they're like an English based, you know, they're not even an Irish based GA following thing. So that just shows you how things can really take off.
Yeah. Yeah, but it was nice to see Ronan celebrating, though. Jeez, there's not enough celebrating of goals in the GAA as far as I'm concerned, so that was nice to see.
Yeah, if there's any man that can do it, it's him.
Yeah, no, that's true.
He said to me before, if I score a goal today, I'm going to do a celebration. And I was like, what one are you going to do? And I thought he was going to do another one, a Kendrick Lamar humble dance thing. But fair play to him. If he can do what he did yesterday, we'll be happy enough. Not in terms of celebration, in terms of his finish.
No, obviously, yeah, in terms of the chip goal. Right, listen, come here, Tiernan. We've gone way over time here. Listen, thanks very much for taking the call, and best of luck in the quarter final.
Thanks a lot.
Dear, great to finally get to interview you.
Oh, really, yeah?
why
is it great?
Why do you not do many interviews?
I don't know, really. I wasn't being asked to do a whole pile.
Really?
Yeah. Have you ever rang me?
I know we spoke about the defensive side of things. If you're coming in and you want to be, if you want to be the Woolly Parkinson and just play for myself, and an inter-county corner forward isn't just hatching inside either. Unfortunately for you, Woolly, it won't last forever. You can ask ex-players that. You know that yourself, Woolly.
Yeah, mine never started at all.
Yeah, well, that's neither here nor there.
AIB, backing club and county.
Right, lads, well, it has to be said, Dublin were absolutely sensational. Let's call a spade here. They were brilliant. You know, the Kildare, to their credit, went out to try and play football, not stifle Dublin. But Dublin just, I suppose, when they get that opportunity, they just can't believe their luck, and they just kind of blow you away with their pace, their power, all those different qualities that they have. And then their scoring power up front. Like, I mean, it's just sensational.
Outrageous. They were a fantastic performance by them, but you see, you come back and they're lying in wait listening to all this talk that Kildare are going to put up to us this weekend.
Yeah.
Of course, you can be sure while Pim get motivated, Dublin have to get motivated somewhere or other, and you can be sure Jim Gavin is telling these guys, look, what these guys think they're going to come up here in our backyard and going to beat us. But the performance from Dublin was just outstanding. You have to admire the pace of the team, their movement, their running. Okay, the first goal was very questionable. You have to question David Hyland why he followed his man out to the right hand side and left a space of 30 yards in behind him. Like, he just wasn't very game aware. Like, when you're playing Dublin, like, you have to, he has to mark the space in front of the goal. Where Dean Rock ran 40 yards into the space, got a hand pass over the top from Kieran Kilkenny, bang in the net. Second one.
So it's actually Hyland was at fault for that one, and it was Keith Cribben saw that run being made by Dean Rock and he just let it go and then decided I'll go now.
That's lack of experience, and Keane O'Neill pointed after the game, like, I mean, you don't, like, there's times you let your man off, he's no danger out there, you might concede an odd score, but you don't concede a goal to Dublin in the first, if you're playing Dublin, you have to push up on clucks and kickouts straight away and you can't concede a goal in the first 20-25 minutes. That's what you try and keep the game tight.
Yeah, you have to track runners.
This
is the honesty Tyrone have, Mayo have, Kerry have, Dublin have. They'll track any runner even if it's not their man. Keith Cribben saw that run and he didn't track it.
They'll track them, but also in that, like, you look at the Tyrones, Kerry's, the Mayo's, they won't leave that space in front of the fullback. The fullback will stay there. Like, yeah. They'll have a wing back there. They won't leave that gap there.
Yeah. So for the second goal then, it was just as bad defending. It was Johnny Byrne. And it was Slattery who both got sucked into.
You'd put the blame with probably Slattery a little bit more, where he just a bit over eager, where he should have probably sort of tracked McCarthy's run and then went back to help out. But then the hand pass came inside to McCarthy and straight from goal. But still, on saying that, there were still two Kildare defenders between McCarthy and the goal.
That was it.
He got turned very easily, and the Kildare cornerback, went back on the goal line. Like, no danger back there. He should have gone towards McCarthy's boot to try and dive the ball.
But they showed Porrick, actually, when they showed the camera angle from behind the goals, and I didn't notice this at the time, but the fullback again, Hyland, he was standing in the middle of the goals, right? And the ball was played across. Like, right across the goals, and he never drift. He was left unmarked. He didn't drift across that side to sense the danger. All right, they're switching the play up here. He kind of stayed like as a sweeper around the middle or to the left. And I was like, if he had drifted across there, James McCarthy's running into him. Like, but they didn't sense that at all. Like,
this has come into our game, and I can remember Jimmy Blake saying it down in Galway towards years ago. Like, and he was quite right at the time. It's gone back a long time ago, actually, when he said, like, you go out now and you're marking a man as a defender, and your job is to keep that man quiet. So you're basically, you're shadowing your man, and you don't really care what happens around you, which is wrong too, because you're just trying to mark your own man and keep your own man quiet instead of helping out your teammate behind you. And some defenders nowadays aren't just game aware that you got to block up in front of the D area, keep five or six bodies there when the danger is coming down the field, and then you won't concede these goals.
Yeah, no, it is.
That's a form of watching your own back as well, though. It's this whole idea of, it's not my man, it's not my problem. And
I thought that attitude was gone, because everyone's now, kind of, half-back lines are dropping off their men, and it's all being shared around now. So the idea that I've got a man, now maybe the two cornerbacks will have their men, but outside of that, you're all, especially in the modern game, you're all supposed to help each other.
You see, sometimes when you have wing-backs, we spoke of this the last day, your wing-forwards coming back, they're coming back marking space, they're not marking actual people. That's another thing as well. They're just seen to be back there doing their job, but what are they doing? Like, are they marking? Are they getting the ball? Are they going forward? Not helping out. You have to be very game aware. So definitely, as a centre half back and a full back, you have to have three men either left and right here in front of you within 10 yards. If you haven't, you're going to be in bother.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like the difference, I don't know who it was, but Kildare put a nice hand pass straight through the middle, and like Dublin were open for, you know, first time it seemed, but they had that sort of ability to sense a danger, and three or four of them were in on top, and Kildare had to take the point in the end. But just that sense that we're in trouble here, and all three just reacted and didn't let anything happen. You have to be honest as well, like, not just game at work, you have to be honest with the work you're going to do and say, right, I might not get the credit for this, but I'm going to bust my balls here for these 10 metres.
I think that's it. And you see, Kildare's game plan as well defensively is for Doyle to drop off and cover his full back line. Kieran Kilkenny plays centre half forward, so immediately Kildare are in a bit of bother here, because, like, I mean, are you really going to drop off the man that kind of makes things happen? And we'll talk about Kieran Kilkenny in a little while, but, like, I mean, he's getting away from the kind of stuff that I've criticised him on the podcast about. He held centre forward position a lot and was winning ball on that line, not just laterally hand passing off, was properly trying to make things happen and go at goals. And he's a different type of player altogether, which is great to see.
Kildare management should have spotted that. Like, would have known that there was a chance he would have been playing there, and they should have had a plan in place that if he did go centre half forward, well, this guy, you pick him up, you go man to, you have to go man to man in Kilkenny because he handles the ball twice more than any other player in Dublin.
Yeah.
So
definitely, and we actually talked on Thursday night that we thought Keith Cribben would just man mark them, but all the Kildare defenders played in their positions, which they weren't detailed at all. And then you look at the Dublin, who were the favourites, completely juggled their back line around to pick up. Like Keane O'Sullivan didn't sweep, the best sweeper in the country, he man marked Flynn. You had John Small went in man marked Kelly. Do you know what I mean? You had Jack McCaffrey on Slattery. Well, maybe that was just the way they were playing. But like Jack McCaffrey would let Slattery off, and Jack McCaffrey would drop in front and play the Keane O'Sullivan role. So just Dublin are just so adaptable. Like, I mean, this is, they're not rigid in Keane O'Sullivan's our sweeper. No, he's our fastest, strongest man, which matches up perfectly with Daniel Flynn, and he did a great job in Flynn, even though Flynn got a couple of really good scores. In general, Keane O'Sullivan did really, really well in him. But it's just that flexibility that you, and it's almost that idea that you're not really sure how Dublin are going to line out now.
And O'Sullivan did it against Westmeath as well when he took on Heslin.
Yeah.
So it's two games in a row he's not been sweeping, and Dublin have adapted to it. They're really giving respect, maybe respect as due to their opponents, and they're setting up accordingly and then figuring out how to beat them going forward.
Yeah, but it also comes with experience as well. Like, I mean, they've played in big, big top games, so they'll be doing this when they play the bigger teams on the line, so they're getting ready for how to get players adaptable. They don't just stick into the one system of, as you say, Keane Sullivan sitting back and not going to, because Kerry, when Dublin play Kerry won't leave Keane Sullivan sitting free. So
yeah, so that's it. And like, it'll be interesting to see who Keane O'Sullivan will pick up, you know, for Kerry when they do play them. But lads, it's a huge credit from Jim Gavin, because like, I have criticised Jim Gavin the odd time, only like really his media duties and that he's a little bit boring. But as a manager, his ruthlessness and his ruthlessness is Brian Cody-esque, and that's what keeps this team coming back and coming back. Because if he was to stick with all these fellas, you know, that won him all Irelands, like, I mean, he's not, there's a real freshness to Dublin now. Like, you have a half forward line of Conor Callaghan, Niall Scully are in their first year. Kieran Kilkenny's still young and hungry and really wants it. Then you have Paul Mannion, young and hungry, hasn't won enough yet, still fresh, fast. Paddy Andrews is the old man of that forward line. Yeah. And then Dean Rock, who's young and hungry as well. So, like, I mean, this is a huge turnover. The easiest thing in the world for him is to stay with Bernard Brogan, Kevin McManaman. And these lads are looking over these lads' shoulders now. But there's a ruthlessness involved in not playing lads that have won three All-Irelands for you. You know, and Kevin McManaman got you the goals. Like, you have to be heartless. And Jim Gavin is heartless. But, like, I mean, that's what makes him brilliant.
Yeah, but, like, that's the hardest part of a successful manager, to keep freshness in the squad. And he's done a superb job on it. Okay, people argue he has the tools.
It was easy for Cody as well.
They are coming through. But as I will say, and I've said it before on radio, Jim Gavin has created the situation Dublin is in now. Nobody else has done it. Okay, Pat Gilroy tried at the time, came along, done his bit. Dublin County Board then created what, under 14 or 16 minor. We see the Vex players all over the place managing these kids. But Jim Gavin has created the atmosphere and the environment in Dublin GAA. Like, did no one make no mistake about that? He has created this, and he's kept it going, and he probably will keep it going another while. We don't know how. Okay, people said they might do three in a row, but like, they're going to be around for the next 10 years, the way they're going.
Oh well, they will. But look at our half back line: Lowndes, young, hungry, fresh; Johnny Small, young, hungry, fresh; Jack McCaffrey, young, hungry. Like, I mean, this is a transformation. I was just looking back, the 2011 team is nearly gone now, barring a couple like a few different lads. Even the 2013 team, there's only seven left off that starting team. So, like, I mean, this is constantly bringing these lads in and constantly keeping it young, hungry and fresh.
Jack McCaffrey had an off for the year last year. I mean, if that happened in any other county, that the footballer of the year was going away for a year, there'd be uproar, like, you know. And but he was let go, and he wasn't rushed back into the squad either last year or this year when he came back in, you know. He was eased into the league games, and he's absolutely flying at the minute, like, and he's going to be a serious player come back into the basic of the championship as well.
Yeah.
But it's solely down to Jim Gavin. You can't praise the guy enough. I done a thing for Clay and GA there lately when Jim was guest of honour, and he spoke really, really well. I'll have you disagree that he's not
first
a
time for everything.
Believe that, honestly.
But like, these managers can't go out and, you know, say that their head cases on the radio or this kind of stuff. They have to have some bit of moderation. But he's a really intelligent fella, like, and he was actually left that function that evening at 6:30, and he was heading up to train the under-10s in Clondalkin. Like, that's the kind of man he is. Like, real GA man.
He's a great GA man. There's no doubt that he's a brilliant GA man. There's no doubt about that. And like, I mean, like, he's clearly a brilliant manager. Like, and it's not just at this level, it's at under 21 level as well. Like, I mean, it's not like this is, it's just consistent winning. And to keep a team that are favourites for every game, like, on that edge that he keeps them on, like, I mean, that's a huge quality.
Yeah, but he also, as well, sorry, Conor, he also has a good backroom team in beside him. Like, you look at most managers that have two kind of, I wouldn't say Mickey Mouse lectors, like, but he's gone for Jason Sherlock,
who coaches in their own right.
You know, Declan Darcy is a fantastic guy. He's from Leitrim, he's in Dublin for years, but he's a brilliant coach. Very, very good. He's a good backroom setup as well, but he that picks that, like, you know, so he knows where they're going, where they want to go, and look at, they're going to be hard to stop.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. One thing, and look, Fenton in midfield, young, hungry, fresh. So it's young, hungry, fresh is their motto right throughout the field, and that's just the reality of it. But one tactic I thought Kildare could have used more often, lads, is that long diagonal ball, right? Because in the first 5 minutes, Tommy Moolett got one, right? He drifted in. It could have been a goal. It nearly should have been goal. And in the last few minutes, Paddy Brophy got one, and he got a goal. And in between those two bloody polar ends of the game, there was none. And, like, I can't comprehend it, Pádraig, because you'll know playing the full forward line. It's a nightmare playing against the Dublin full back line. They mark you from the front, and their intensity is so strong around the field. Players look up, and they see their man behind, they see that their forward is behind their man, and the Dublin lads, it's Philly McMahon actually turns around and faces his man, right? I always hated that. I hated being marked from the front because your initial break is gone. You're screwed. So you're hoping that lads and that Keane O'Neill would have done his homework on this and gone, we've Paddy Brophy, who's a big man. Do you know what I mean? We've Daniel Flynn, who's a big man. Why would they not for a while have put those in there? And because Kildare were playing pretty offensively, that Dublin didn't have a sweeper all the time. Jack McCaffrey was trying to get back when Slattery was dropping deep. That they wouldn't have had the extra man like they often would have had against Mayo, where Keane O'Sullivan would be doubling up. Why would you not have planned to go, let's test these lads out? Because you know, if you're being marked from the front, Park, you get one of those balls over the top, he's going to, his cough will soften, and he'll have to be honest and stay.
Yeah, and then he's back beside you or whatever. Like, but look, I've seen it as well in a lot of games. Like, these big guys, like, it's football training nowadays. I think it's just so intent in training is to defend, don't give the ball away. And then you come out in a championship match, you're not going to lorry the ball 40, 50 yards in top of a fella. I don't think actually that a lot of players can kick the ball diagonally 30, 40 yards because they don't do it in training. So, like, training wise, it's all about defensive setups, blocking, tackling, come back. And they don't practice this, like, and teams should do it more often. And, like, even for spells in the game for 10 minutes or 5 minutes, like, stick in a big guy in full forward. You look at the Mayo Galway game when Aidan O'Shea came on from Mayo. We were understanding, our full back line was under pressure that day, and they done really, really well. We couldn't understand how Mayo didn't put Aidan O'Shea in there. Kildare Force went, he might have won a free or two. They could have won the game, we don't know.
Yeah.
Like, Kildare should have probably used the tactic a bit more often yesterday. But, like, they obviously didn't train to play that way. They're training to play good football the way they're playing it. But definitely it's something that they need to look at. With the big men they have, they're physically very, very, very strong. So if you had that big high ball coming in and tap down, even a break off it or something, just to keep the defenders on their toes. You don't do it all the time, but for 5 minutes pockets and maybe once or twice in each half, it's worth thrown in there.
That's it, because and if it does nothing else, it keeps them honest, and it won't. Philly McMahon will go, shit, I'm not chancing that, because, like, I mean, if it goes over top, because Paddy Brophy's main strength is that he's out in front of his man. You saw it against Meath, he destroyed the Meath defender because he's being marked from the back. We saw nothing of Paddy Brophy winning it out in front the other day because he was being marked from the front. And when lads looked up, Paddy was jinking in around behind his man, and Philly was turning around. It was Fitzsimons was on Paddy, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And he was turning around. And Paddy's not getting that initial ball that he lives off. And against Meath, he lived off that, won it, and then laid it off. And Kildare's style of play looked lovely. But when that initial ball was gone, really disappointed that Kildare didn't go, let's try Paddy one over the top, and let's make sure Fitzsimons isn't going to risk that, what he's doing. He just didn't do it.
Brophy's a great mover, but he's also a big lump of a man. Like, and you saw, like, how easily he won that ball that went into him. I think he was completely underused, because when he was on possession, he looked like he was going to make something happen. He scored 1-2 from play, I think, and that's even him not being brought
not into playing
the
well. Enough. No, he didn't play great.
Been hammered.
The perception there as well, you see, is that the forward has to get the pinpoint chest ball. Like, if you're inside, and I played there for years, like, if you're inside as a forward, it doesn't matter if there's four in on you or there's two on you, whatever. If you know the ball is coming early, you have some chance of preparing for it. But if you're in there waiting this ball laterally back and over the half hour line before this perfect pass does come in, like, it's a waste of time, because you get it yourself, it's going to be four or five rounds to mark you. But if you know out the field that your teammate has it and you're 1-on-1 inside, if it's going to come in some direction, you'll anticipate that, you'll have the move made ahead of the back, and you should win it. Like, and obviously if you lose two in a row or three in a row, you're looking at the sideline to be called ashore. But it's not a given in GA that you actually kick a ball in 1-on-1 high anymore, because you're seen as giving the ball away, and then you're under pressure that you might be taking off or trying something, you know.
Yeah,
it needs to change. Mentality needs to change on it.
the stats. It's actually like it must be very frustrating. And then the thing, if it doesn't come in, the fella out the field is looking up, they see their full forward behind his man, suddenly have to take that extra bounce, and Dublin are getting in just get the bloody thing in if you've Paddy Brophy. But anyways, like Kildare, I don't really know what to talk too much about Kildare, because they were impressive and they were disappointing all in the same day. Like, they gave it a go.
Were they being patronised a little bit yesterday? Just like, oh, fair play to them, like, they got by nine, are they better than that?
But in their defence, like, they were 2-4 to a point down early doors. After that the game is pretty, you know, they show great heart to get back, and they won the last 10-15 minutes 9-4. A lot of heart to go in at only four down at half time. So that's a lot to build on. Then you've got Dublin, and they went for it. Like, if you go for it the way Kildare went for it, four forwards were always up. Kelly, Flynn, Brophy and McNally had no defensive responsibilities. Conway did, and Slattery did, and I like Slattery. He wears his heart in his sleeve and he's fast, he has that pace. Conway's not up to much on the other wing. Paul Cribben will start ahead of him the next day, and he'd be a huge step up from what Conway does. But, like, I mean, I think Kildare can work on it, you know. I think they have a good team. Like, I mean, if you play the way Kildare play, of course there's going to be situations where you're conceding easy scores, because you don't have that defence in, you know, that bloody, you know, packed defence that's going to be easy to defend. So, like, I mean, I wouldn't criticise them too much, to be honest. I think they can put a positive spin on this on Tuesday night when they get in and say, look, we matched the All-Ireland champions for a full half despite conceding two goals, and, you know, in the second half Dublin got the good start in the second half, and we didn't drop our heads, and, like, they'll put a spin on that, Pádraig, won't they?
By the way, like, they shouldn't be too disappointed. Okay, you can argue the scoring the last by 9 points, but they never threw the towel in. But the game was really up after the two goals early on. They were always chasing the tail, and they couldn't really implement the game plan they had set up to do at the start. So look, at their young side, they're fit, they're in serious physical nick, they're in great shape. They have Armagh in the qualifiers now, which should be an interesting game, with Kieran McGeaney going back playing the role kind of manager. But you'd imagine that they would have a bit much for Armagh, but physicality stakes, Armagh will probably be happy with the win against Tipperary, but I think that Kildare could be a bit physically too strong for Armagh.
Yeah, I'd probably agree with that. Right, we'll just move on quickly to Tyrone and Down, because we had Tiernan McCann obviously on the line, so we won't spend as much time on this. But they've scored 360 in their three games in the Ulster Championship. This Ulster Championship that's meant to be a dour kind of competition, they've strolled through it almost like Dublin-esque in Leinster. So this is I made a prediction before the Championship, Pádraig. Ulster Championship's overrated, well, and nothing has happened in the Ulster Championship. Happened in the Ulster Championship to help me change my mind.
Well, what about five Ulster teams being in the last 12?
Last 12 is a nonsense anyways. It's like, I mean, it's last 8.
Round four qualifier spots, three Ulster teams made it to that as well. And now these Ulster teams aren't starting in semi-finals of their provincial championships. They're not coming straight into round four, round three.
360, Tyrone, was through this Ulster championship, this weak Ulster championship this year. But lads, Down were a huge disappointment. Tyrone, again, nothing hugely new about Tyrone. Tyrone played their game. I saw Sean Kavanagh say after the game that we kept it tight, and then in the third quarter we knew it would open up, and then that's where they pulled away. That's almost like the blueprint of Tyrone. Like, I mean, when the other team is fresh and lively, let's keep it tight and defend like your life's depending on it. When these fellas get tired, they're in big trouble. That's kind of the way Tyrone kind of work, and they'll just kind of have the ability to blow you away on the counter-attack then.
And they were sensational. You said sensational at the top of the show, and they were. It was like just a perfect game for them. They played down to perfection. I mean, they might have conceded a goal, should have conceded a goal before half time, but apart from that, everything just went right into their hands. Like, they sucked them in and they completely overran them. How many times did Matty Donnelly just stroll up the field?
Yeah.
Colm Kavanagh, Sean Kavanagh were great around the middle. Like, they just looked so strong everywhere, probably lacking a little bit of a clinical age up top. I think Mark Bradley could score more. He's not taking on enough shots.
Do you know what? Like, I mean, the ball going into him isn't great. And number two, when he does get the ball, he's making breaks left and right because there's a sweeper in front of him. And when he gets the ball in the corner, he doesn't have the size to take his man on. So he always has to get it and then recycle it out. And sometimes I wonder, right, it's an out ball, fair enough, but nothing ever really comes off it, does it? You know, it's
not really, no. But look, 360 is huge scoring, but you got to look at the teams that scored against. Like, scored a lot of it. Like, I was at the Donegal game. I thought were outstanding against Donegal, where they're brilliant at their defensive structure is unbelievable. Like Colm Cavanagh is key to them, the way he gets back in, covers ground, attacking. You have Hamsey centre back has been an unbelievable find for Tyrone this year. He's been man the match in the games, two games so far. Like, he's great man to get forward, not afraid to kick a score for centre half back, which is great to see. Most backs up there will be turning around looking to hand pass it off left and right, whereas when he comes forwards, you can actually watch the forwards are looking to find him because they know he's going to score. Like, but you have to credit Mickey Hart for what he's done. He's come round again with another bunch of players again. Okay, are they good enough to go on to that big level, because Dublin are so far ahead and Kerry, so we think. We don't know. Like, I definitely wouldn't like to play Tyrone, because they have the great mentality, like, that it's us again, the world kind of thing.
And don't they? Yeah, they will
put that in. The two McCanns are playing fantastic stuff at the minute. Like, Tiernan is turning to be one of the best wing backs in the game. Peter Hart is an outstanding footballer, brilliant brain on him. Matty Donnelly is getting there again. He's still a lot to learn, not to do, but he's getting there again. Like, but to me, like, they will probably win their quarter final no matter who comes through, and they could set up a mouth-watering semi-final with Dublin.
That'd be brilliant. And they're kind of playing with a smile on their face. I loved when Ronan O'Neill scored his goal and Matty Donnelly's running back out just kind of laughing.
Yeah.
Like, it's an Ulster final. It must be a lovely place to be, like Tiernan said, that you're in an Ulster final and the game is probably, you know, the game's won with 10 minutes to go. Yeah. It must be love in a just sunny on, day, yeah, 31,000, yeah, and we have this won.
And you have to watch that goal, Colm. I mean, if anybody, any other forward in the country done that, the Bernard Brogans or the Colm Coopers of this world done that, they'd be shown it and shown it over. I thought it was an absolutely fantastic finish. Okay, the game was up, but it took great presence of mind. A little dink from 14 yards in it. It was a brilliant, brilliant finish.
Yeah, no, it was. And he celebrated, a nice little celebration after his first goal as well, Ronan O'Neill. We don't see as many neither Dublin goal were celebrated, but we talked about that in the podcast before. Dublin just don't celebrate. We're speculating this is an instruction from boring Jim Gavin, but we're not 100% sure. But yeah, definitely Tyrone are well in the mix. Like I said, tactically there's not an awful lot more. Like, I mean, the one question I always have about Tyrone is that they'll, against Down, they'll commit the bodies forward and they'll look great and they'll run up scores. Against Donegal, they did it second half, the game was won. Against Mayo and against the top teams, they're very scared to do that. Like, it's easy to do it when the game's won and everyone's bursting forward, but there can be the proof will be in the pudding when they play a good team this year. Will they commit those bodies forward? Probably not in the first half. In the second half, I'd imagine they will.
Yeah, I thought, like, against Mayo last year was probably just, we always made the reference point before, Donegal in 2011, they still just had to progress a little bit. Now their system's a bit more slick. I mean, they went at Donegal. Like, Donegal were expected, well, I certainly thought Donegal would really take Tyrone on, maybe even beat them. They went at them, like, in the second half mostly as well. Like, but the end of the first half, they completely just sensed blood and went for it. I think the way they play now, like, we talked about the tactics and the 10 free men, I think it was 11 free men they had against Down, they just bring them all back and then they're all required to go forward. So I think this is part of their system. Playing Dublin is automatically going to be different because Dublin are so fast, they have so much possession, they win their own ball every time, so you're going to automatically be a bit more defensive. But look how many times somebody different was going forward for Tyrone. There's Sean Kavanagh, a goal chance. Colin McCann's going forward. Two men are bouncing off him and he pops it off to Sean Kavanagh. Niall Sludden, like a little snake, darting through. There's so many different people come up. Peter Hart comes up from different angles.
Yeah.
I think these players are not going to be sitting back for a whole game anymore.
Yeah, you'd love to think not. You'd love to think not, because, like I said, Tyrone are very likeable, and, like I said, you can be likeable and brilliant at the same time. But the third quarter, if Tyrone play Dublin, it's going to be very interesting, because that's both their business part of the team. Like, I mean, when they both hit each other, when that's when they like to hit you, it's going to be really, really interesting. Right, we'll have to leave it there. We're going to talk about the Conor Callaghans and the Bernard Brogans and all the brilliant individual performances in the next part, Performance of the Weekend.
Is the little dink fist pass from a crowded area into that D right at home by where Bernard, I've talked to Bernard about, Bernard's very patient, but this little dink ball, you know, the one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken over, hits the ground and it bounces into a fella's chest, and there's consternation then in around the D and in around that area. Watch for this in the semis and the final. Do you know the one I'm talking about? That little fisted ball that's just bounced in a crowded area, but it gets to the
yeah,
body.
You have said it three times.
It's in around, but you're looking at me, you're looking
well,
at me
a crowded area, isn't
you're looking at me with such a confused confused head in you. It's like I was talking about you trying to get a point in Coppers or something there in a crowded area. Yeah, watch for it.
Alright, Performance of the Weekend, there's only one place to start. Usually we have talked about these lads in the analysis section and we don't want to go over it again, but I deliberately kept talk of Conor Callaghan out to put him in here. Like, I mean, composure is probably the word I'd use to describe him. For someone that's as young as him, he never rushes. He never tries to blast the ball over the bar. It's always composed, and he strokes it over. And even if somebody's running at him from his blind side, he'll spot it, he'll do a dummy solo, and then he'll stroke it over. Like, it's never, there's nothing rushed with him. Nothing's a panic. Nothing. And this is a Leinster final in front of, you know, whatever the attendance was, over 60,000. And you're 21, and you're playing with fellas that were heroes of yours growing up, and you're just completely taking this in your stride and stroking balls over the bar off left and right without a care in the world. Like, it was beautiful to watch him.
Yeah, look, he was fantastic at the weekend. He kicked 12 points, I think it was 6 each, wasn't it?
Yeah,
6-3, 6 from play, like, which, like, leaving the 6 frees aside, like, the 6 points in play in a provincial final is great kicking. I thought he was outstanding, and obviously he's the last of the hurling community in Dublin, where he won his club medal with Cooley this year. But he's a fine young fella, and he's great to see a young fella that does lift his head, not just become this individual kind of forward that's trying to get his own name on the score. He's a real, real team player, and obviously that's been drilled into him by his manager and the forwards coach, and Jason Sherlock. But he's a really, really joy to watch. And the fact he's 21, like, you're going to see 10 more years of this going on.
And he's playing wing forward, lads. See, like, I mean, he can clearly play anywhere, because he's made his name as a full forward at under 21s. And I was like, we haven't seen him full forward, because against Carlow was at that game, he played centre forward. And then against Westmeath, he was in the half forward line somewhere as well. It wasn't at that, so I don't know for sure. Yeah. And he was wing forward. Like, wing forward.
Yeah, but he was wearing 12. I don't think he spent a whole. He didn't, in my eyes,
well,
the game,
he moved he in a bit spend, in the
yeah,
second
he moved
half.
In a lot. Like, he didn't spend a whole lot of time out 12, but look, he's a go getter. He's a go to man. He's a finisher. So, like, you can argue the case that Jeremy Connolly was missing, but look at, he's filling his boots no end to the minute. Like.
Yeah, there's no doubt. He's a sensation. And then one of the older fellas, Bernard Brogan, who only got on because of a black card. He'd 5 shots on the goals and he'd 5 points. Like, I mean, sometimes when you get to that age and you do well coming in off the bench, it works against you, because, like, you'll never get a start then, you know, that kind of way. You're this impact, and that's the last thing Bernard would want, because he's a competitor and he'd want to start. But he was brilliant. He was outstanding, there's no doubt about that.
And boys like him sum up the skill of what O'Callaghan's doing. You know, boys like him are getting in the team, and there's 21 year olds running the show now. Like,
but I think that's more for the freshness thing than the actual form. Like, Bernard could be flying it, and Jim actually said Bernard's flying it. But I think Jim is not playing Bernard for the optics of, we're keeping this hungry and fresh. I don't know whether that's just obviously the tactics he's using.
And he came on yesterday and he looked like he was chomping at the bit. I mean, the first ball, he had a man hanging off him, punching his ribs, and he's snapping in for it. I don't think he lost the ball all game either. Everything he was doing was so sharp, it looked like he was sticking his hands in Jim Gavin's face. He said, "Hey, don't you dare forget about me." He was brilliant. Like, just like a rocket up his arse.
It was. I wouldn't dare say anything to Jim Gavin either. I'd say you'd be fairly well gone straight away. But he was brilliant. On the Kildare side, lads, Kevin Feely was a joy to watch, like a proper fetcher. He gave Fenton all he wanted, but I've never seen Fenton be given a going over in the air, let's be honest. Fenton was trying to break the Kildare kickouts, and Feely was still fetching him. And imagine, number one, to outfetch Fenton is a difficult thing, but to outfetch him when Fenton's trying to break it, like, I mean, that's a serious bloody skill, like, because he was trying to break it. Then James McCarthy went on him, and he's still outfetching James McCarthy, who was trying to break it. Like, when you put it into the context of the two lads trying to break it off this lad, and he's still plucking him out of the sky. He's a beautiful player, and he's frees off the left and the right off the hands. I haven't seen, I think Colin Corkery was the last one I've seen doing that. Maybe Dear McConnelly does it for Vincent's? No, he doesn't. But I've seen him doing it for Dublin before, where he'll go with the freeze off the left and right. But this is a seriously talented individual. It was over in England playing soccer at a League One or a Championship level. Beautiful player to watch.
Yeah, no, because he's back to your kind of old traditional type midfielder.
Yeah.
He can catch the ball, he kick the freeze to the ground, but his style, his balance is brilliant. Like, and I don't know how he wasn't shortlisted for the man of the match in the Sunday game, but look, that's here or there. That's probably because he got his black hair, they probably couldn't put him on it. But really, really big find for Kildare, and going to have a huge, huge future in him, you know. And like, Keane O'Neill is lucky to have them young lads, that Daniel Flynn, these lads, they can actually go and build a team around these young lads, and Kevin Feely is going to be central to that.
Do you know what's very interesting about their kickouts? All their kickouts go to midfield, which is not a stupid tactic considering you have this fella out there. But you know what's funny about it, and I was watching it, him and Mulick don't split. When they kick it out one side of the field, the both of them will go the same side of the field, almost to the point where they're contesting the same ball. And Tha is a very strange one. Like, you could understand Mulick following Flynn if he was standing down, But it was just weird. Like, I was trying to see what kind of strategy did Kildare have for the kick out, and they didn't have any. Your man, he's just getting it out there.
Do you need a strategy when you have those boys in
maybe
the middle?
Maybe not. It's hard to know.
You do need a strategy. You don't need it probably certain games, but you need it against the big teams. You can't have two midfielders going to the one side of the field all the time. You go sometimes, but you have to have different strategies for kick outs around the place. But come back on to Bernard Brogan there. I mean, he's one of my favourite players watching. Like, I think he's a top class forward, and you have to give him credit for his mentality not to walk away last year when they've been dropped for the final and Cormac Costello comes in, kicks 3 points. We haven't heard a word of him this year yet, so we don't know when he's going to hit the scene. But like, Bernard must have been delighted with the black card that Dean Rock got. He's the only one in Dublin that was happy with it. But to kick 5 points and come in as a sub was great kicking for him, and goes to show he has the heart for it and the bite all the time from
fair play to him. I was just saying, from the 1 year that I spent regularly on the subs bench, I would have prayed for a black card back then. Like, I mean, you're in 20 minutes later for a fella that's playing well. Dean Rock just scores a goal, all the Dublin lads are buzzing, Bernard's looking in at the field going, I'm not getting on here for the last 50 minutes. Then the black card, a forward, subs love black cards, absolutely love them.
You can be guaranteed that Dean Rock won't get a black card again for the rest of the year.
No, definitely not. Ronan O'Neill, lads, purely for the cheekiness of his goal, beautiful. And Jamie Clark, who was outstanding. Conan, you were at that one down in Thurles. But like, I mean, Pat Spillane waxed lyrical about him. I think intelligence wise he has got a lot of similarities with the Gooch, and balance and poise and, you know, football brain. Probably not at Gooch's level, you know, yet, but like, I mean, he's an outstanding player and can play make as well as, like Gooch, I think that's where the comparison is coming from, his ability to play make as well as finish.
Yeah, he's doing a lot of dirty work as well, like a lot of honest work for Armagh. He's coming a bit deeper than the two lads. It's usually Murnan and McParnham was burning as well inside, he was coming out down. It's usually those two inside, and Clark sort of got a bit more of a license to go win ball, but he's winning some real good ball for them. Like, when they're hitting the break, they're hitting him early. Like, he's not winning them all, but he is darting all over the field trying to get on early possession when it's coming into him. But his goal as well, like that, like you talk about cheekiness, I mean, just to sort of, he was thinking about going to roll it in with his left foot, stops it dead, takes it around the keeper then on the ground. I mean, that's I've never seen something so cool. I mean, Ronan O'Neill's was pretty good, but oh my god, like what Clark did for his goal,
that was beautiful. That was almost Clark going, that wasn't really a dummy solo, that just he pulled out of the shot.
Yeah, he just realised, you know, it was
different. It was different, yeah, I realised, and he just completely improvised and used his soccer to, it was a beautiful goal, because I've often done that where in taking a shot it's too late to do the dummy solo, and you realise you can shoot it or else just let it fall, but he let it kind of fall in a way that his foot kind of killed it to bring it back into him, so it was actually beautiful. Quickly, before we give the performance of the weekend, lads, I want to give a shout out to one of my pet hates, and Sean Kavanagh did it and Howard did it for Dublin as well, is the hand pass over the bar when the goal is on. Now, I did it a few times in my career only because I can't score, I'm not good at scoring goals. Like, it wasn't a quality of mine, I wasn't a goal getter, so I'd fist it over the bar purely out of, you know, I'll get one on the board rather than miss. Sean Kavanagh can get goals. Now, Howard is only a defender, but like, there were 9 points up in the last minute and you're through on goals and you're hand passing it over when you can rattle that bloody net. I can't understand that. Can't understand why Sean Kavanagh, in a game which was as tight as it was in the first half, gets a glimpse of goals. Like, you're not expecting many goals in these Ulster games. Jesus, you have to go for it when you get it. And they had a 4-on-2 situation when Kavanagh took that hand pass point. I don't know. And it's the commentators that say they took the right option that drive me bloody berserk. It's never the right option to do that when a goal is on.
No, you're only going to, in the big crunch games, you're only going to get probably 2 goal chances, possibly 3. But when they do come up, you have to go for them.
Yeah.
I think the reason Sean Kavanagh hand passed that ball over the bar, he probably made 3 mistakes before that. Uncharacteristic of Sean Kavanagh, and he said, right, I need to settle myself down and get a score, get on the scoreboard, which he did. And whether it was the right option or not, look at the one, the game, it didn't matter in the end.
In
tighter games, like, I guarantee you, in Croke Park, Sean Kavanagh will go for the goal. He's that killer instinct. There was a man across the square, could have got the hand pass across. You look at Monaghan the other night, they hand passed the ball across the goal. It's an easy pint on
for
there
Kelly
to put them 2 up, instead of going 2 up to win 4 up for Kelly's goal, so, or O'Connell's goal, or whatever. But look at, you will only get in the big matches 2 chances, and you have to go for them. Look at Daniel Flynn's chance yesterday in Dublin, like, he had a great chance. went down at OKQ. Mm. As he went for it, he kicked it straight at Cluxton, but at least he went for it at the same time, you know.
Kavanagh missed twice against Donegal, two goal chances. Maybe that was part of his thinking as well, was it? Or does he just block that out? Like, but maybe he was thinking four up against Down, we've got a good enough defence.
Yeah, so. I just think yesterday with Sean, when he was going through on the goal, like he didn't start the game awfully well. Made two or three uncharacteristic errors from Sean's, which is unlike him, but to get himself on the scoreboard, he just tapped it over the bar to get himself settled down. So look at
it. And obviously, if you're 3 points up and you're throwing goals and it's the last minute, hand pass it over to make it four, yeah. So the game's safe. So there is, it's not never an opportunity to do that, but it's frustrating when you watch it, especially fellas who can finish. Right, that's all we have time for. Oh, performance of the weekend goes to Conor Callaghan. I don't think there's any surprise about that. Absolutely sensational. Really looking forward to seeing him playing more in the championship against Kerry, especially because he'll get space against them, and then you'll see can he do it when it's a real test, and that'll elevate him from shooting the lights out in Leinster, which I'm saying he looks clearly a brilliant player, to actually being able to do it when it matters for Dublin. So that's the next step to go that he needs to go to. He's only 21. I've no doubt that he will do that. So Con, congratulations. We'll send you on a mug when we get that done. Right, that's all we have time for. We'll talk to you on Thursday for the preview show. Good luck.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas, will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing houses for f***ing 10 years.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.